Greg, I have a request.
I have a request
to start the show.
I am listening.
Can we go through all of the top 30 players selected one by one and just treat this essentially as a glorified version of the Junior Podcast?
Can we? I will agree to your request if we can leave the ones the Bruins drafted aside, which means that we've cut the first round in half.
That's hilarious. So no Zboril, no DeBrusk, no Sinishin? Okay, fine. That's okay, fine.
Fine if you would be like that.
You know, the thing about the Bruins this weekend, and I did a hit on Boston radio before, and clearly things are as cloudy and gloomy as they've ever been in Boston with regard to what they did over the weekend. You know, like, maybe not the best year to pick Louis DeBrusk's kid if you're trying to say that we're going in a different direction. We're not the same Bruins. This, that, the other thing.
The 40-goal scorer.
It's just the optics of it.
He is nothing like the player. He is coming out of the Western Hockey League this year the best pure goal scorer. Jake DeBrusk, hands down.
He was taken about 10 spots too high. Their next pick was taken about a round too early.
Yeah.
It was not the best of drafts for them.
Listen, it was one of those years, though, where if you like the player, you jump up and grab him because everyone's list is radically different. Like, I like Zach Sinishin. He does a lot off the rush. He needs to learn how to score different ways. But the guy's got fantastic feet. He has an athletic body. He's almost like, you know what he's like right now in junior, Greg? He's like a poor man's Chris Kreider. That's what he was like. He's got the same kind of frame, the same type of skill set. He's probably going to tear up the OHL next year playing with Blake Spears. But you're right. That 15, that was a little bit of a shock. I thought best for Zach Sinishin was maybe like between 28th and 30th in the mm-hmm. first round, but for mm-hmm. sure he's going to go somewhere early to mid second round. So, yeah, they may have jumped up early to grab. I shouldn't say they did jump up too early, according to everyone else's list, to grab Zach Sinishin.
I assume that everybody who listens to this podcast also listens to Junior, but just in case. just in case.
We don't have to go through all 30, but go ahead.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Who was the pick? What was the pick that made you say, oh my, that is a nice pick? And what was the pick that made you say, I don't know about that one?
Oh, that is interesting. What a great question. Well, I think, are we just focusing on the first round? Or do you want to go through the entire draft?
Because... you can go through the entire draft. Let me answer the first one first. The fact that Kyle Connor fell to the Jets at, what was it, 17 or 18?
17.
Yeah, it's Seth Jones this year. I mean, that's a kid. It is like I said in the podcast that we did in the car on the way home, it is the first time that I think in the history of mankind a kid named Connor didn't get picked by a Boston team. I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah, and he's all speed as well. Winnipeg had a really nice draft. I mean, I always qualify saying that because, you know, we're dealing with 17, 18-year-olds right now, and who knows who had a good draft. You know, ask me in 5 years' time. I was surprised to see Matthew Barzal fall as far as he did.
Yeah.
The injury cost him, perhaps. And when he came back to Seattle, it took him about 5 games to hit top stride. Then he was fantastic with Ryan Gropp with the Thunderbirds, and then had a really great U18, and former for Mitchell Stevens, probably considered the best player on Team Canada. I thought Barzal was a steal for the Islanders at 16. Denis Gurianov being selected by Dallas, to me, that's the one where I kind of went, oh, wow, the lists really, really are different for everybody. That to me was the one that probably really shocked me the most in the first round. What else in the first round? I think the Islanders, and again, the Islanders, Anthony Beauvillier at 28. Now, he's a smallish guy, 5'10", 170, playing in Shawinigan, all offense,
mm-hmm.
right? He's just like this all-offensive kid. He's a wonderful offensive player. Probably goes a little bit early, more than people expect. You know, you could make the case too that Ilya Samsonov was a surprise in a lot of ways. But if you're the Washington Caps, you think about this. So the Caps grab the number one netminder, Ilya Samsonov, and you say to yourself, "Wow, he's 3 years away." Well, that's fine for Washington. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Because they have Braden Holtby. So in retrospect, man, that's a smart pick.
It's
by
a
the
very
Washington
smart pick.
Caps.
Yeah,
really
I like that pick.
I
like that pick a lot, even though I goofed on Sergey, their PR guy. When I walked up to him before the draft, I'm like, "Look, I'm really busy today. Can you just tell me when you guys are trading for Patrick Sharp?" And he said, well, I can't tell you that. I'm the new GM, and I've decided that we're not going to trade for him today. And I said, okay, can you at least tell me which Russian kid you're taking in the first round? And I meant it as a goof, but damn it if they didn't take a Russian kid in the first round.
Sure enough, Ilya Samsonov, goaltender, 6'3", 203. How happy were you that Pavel Zacha is a New Jersey Devil? I know you love him going in.
I love Pavel Zacha for a few reasons. One, that he's a Devil. Two, that he has a picture of himself and Patrick Eliash with the cup from when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be really thrilling to know that you're going to get a chance to play with your idol. And three, he described himself as a Ryan Getzlaff type. Ha!
Yeah, no pressure.
I said, excuse me, Mr. Zach, I have to turn around for a second and not show you my gigantic tent.
Here becomes the question with Pavel Zacha. Is he a winger or is he a centerman? Who knows?
He's a center. Shut up. No.
All right.
No.
Okay. Okay.
No, he's a center. None of that. We have just nothing in the middle. We've got nothing.
Playing with Kyrou and Kurestalev last year. Well, go ahead.
If he comes up in like the next years, there's a chance that the Devils might have two centers with a Z last name. That's an NHL.
That's right. Record. Oh yeah, no, that's an NHL first. And now here becomes the question. And last year I got into it over Sonny Milano about this question. And again, it's the exact same team. And I'll just put it out there now and let this wick burn down over the summer. The Columbus Blue Jackets draft Zach Werenski, defenseman, mm-hmm. eighth mm-hmm. overall, plays the University of Michigan. The London Knights hold his rights. Now, there are a lot of Wolverines down there to watch the pick. A lot of people from the NCAA's Michigan Wolverines to go, you know, support Zach Werenski. But is he the guy that leaves college to go to the London Knights, who are now looking like they're going to be a powerhouse again? And it's the same team.
You're doing it again, aren't you?
Sorry. And it's the same team, too.
You're doing it again. Yep.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying there were more than a couple of whispers around. Because the one person that I talked to put it like this. If Columbus grabs Werenski, he's going to the London Knights. If Colorado, who we suspect also wanted a defenseman, although they picked up Nikita Zadorov in the O'Reilly trade, pick him up, it's 50-50. Because they usually let mm-hmm. kids stay in college. Mm-hmm. Oh, put it out there for fun. Giggles. Hey, steal by Carolina, by the way. As we talked about last week on the podcast, if Hanifin falls to five, steal for the Hurricanes. Bingo.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
Oh,
boy, I wish there was a team with three draft picks in the first round and other assets that might have been able to move up and take Hanifin.
Yeah, that'd be the Boston Bruins. They want Hanifin as well. Okay, want to get right into that? You want to do the Dougie Hamilton story now?
Let's do it right now.
Okay, hang on. Let me get this out of the way. I was on Toronto radio this morning on 590.
There
right,
you go.
Put it this way.
He sounds fired up.
Well,
you're about to pick up the black and gold bat and go to bat for Cam Neely, aren't you?
No, quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. So you're the Boston Bruins. You've had three elite level players in the past few years in Phil Kessel, Tyler Seguin, and now Dougie Hamilton. All of them have been a quote unquote problem. For various reasons. And, you know, we've seen the personal attacks when they finally get moved. Oh, well, he wasn't a Boston Bruin. He didn't fit our culture. Oh, he was moody and whiny and he was a loner. Okay, so if it's one player, you say, well, you know what? It doesn't always work out. When it's two, you kind of raise an eyebrow. When it's three, much like the Incredible Hulk would go from town to town and everyone would hate him, at a certain point you look in the mirror and you say, maybe the problem is me. At a certain point, do the Boston Bruins not have to say, either we have poor talent evaluation / personal evaluation, or we have poor leadership in this organization?
I would go be. I don't think poor leadership might be the way I go. It's a symptom of this. It's the Bruins' way. That's the real issue, isn't it?
Well, it's costly. Kessel, Seguin, and Hamilton. How many teams can withstand losing three young players like that?
Right. And the law of diminishing returns. You went from two firsts for Kessel to Louis Erickson for Seguin to one round higher than what you would have gotten for an offer sheet for Hamilton. The next young player that leaves, you're going to get a ham sandwich. That's pretty much what it is on the scale that we're looking at.
They'll be ready for the church picnic, just not for the NHL schedule. So great.
Right.
It's great. Fantastic.
No, I agree with you. But again, in Hamilton, at least in Hamilton's case, you can make the argument that the reason that they didn't bring him back was more economic. Well, actually, Kessel was also economic now that I think about it, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, they had that sort of, they weren't going to pay him more than David Krejci and Milan Lucic was going to get.
Right.
And he had the nerve to ask for more, even though he had no leverage. And I think they just soured on some, who's this uppity kid?
uppity loner like Dougie Hamilton.
Yeah, I know. They're all uppity loners with problems in their personality. You only buy it for so long.
Steve Harris passed along that quote in the Boston Herald, and people were like, well, it wasn't a Boston guy saying it, so why are you even taking issue with it? It's not the same thing. Look, it's still the media kind of passing along this innuendo. An unnamed source calling a kid an uppity loner. I mean, you know what that's about, right? You know that's someone looking for a bat pack from the Bruins saying, hey, right, good job there, Stevie. Good job writing about the truth about Doggy. Come on. You know what that's
okay.
about. And by the way, when he says an anonymous assistant GM, we don't know it's not a Bruin, by the way. Just point that out as well.
Hang on. Here's the thing about athletes right now in the NHL. Athletes anywhere. They're mini corporations. You could say that everybody is a loner. You know why? Because they're all mini corporations who, in a lot of ways, are in it for themselves. Now there's a certain team aesthetic you have to adhere to, and guys still do want to win the Stanley Cup, and they have good friends on the team, and sometimes they don't like people on the team and don't really get along, but they still put their differences aside to win a Stanley Cup and win hockey games. But couldn't you make the argument that every team has 23 loners?
You could make that argument.
This isn't like the Boston Bruins. I've told this story before. The Boston Bruins used to have the rule: after every practice and every game, you had to come out as a team for one beer. After that, night's yours. Do whatever you want. That day's gone. Years ago. Decades ago.
That day's gone. But here's the thing: if being a loner in the Boston locker room is a detriment, how in the hell do you win a cup with Tim Thomas as your goalie? That guy lived in a bunker. I mean, all of a sudden, being a loner is a problem? Being a loner is a problem in Boston? Yeah, Tim Thomas is your goalie.
The old school guys will tell you, we just expect that from the position. You know, the old joke, people hockey players hang out with? Goaltenders? It's just sort of assumed that that was the, Gump Worsley's on his own out there.
Here's the sad truth about where the Bruins are right now. And this is just from talking to people around the draft, on the floor, what have you. Don Sweeney was a laughingstock. And it's maybe not his fault, because honestly, it's the contracts that the guy in Edmonton, who's now being fitted for a crown because he made a Cam Talbot trade, it's the contracts he gave out, mm-hmm. that put the Bruins in this spot in some ways. But here's the thing. One, no one believes Don Sweeney's in charge anyway, so they all see him as a puppet.
Yeah.
Two, he overpaid for McQuaid. Three, who the hell knows what happened with the Hamilton trade. When the only information you have that came out is that they wanted Darnell Nurse in a trade with Edmonton for Dougie. They wanted the best defensive prospect Edmonton has had in a decade for a guy Edmonton could sign without giving up a warm body.
That's part of all of this. They were terrified of an offer sheet. They were scared of an offer sheet, and probably an offer sheet that wasn't going to come early. An offer sheet that was going to freeze them for the entire summer. Like, would it surprise you if Fragile Living said, look, we all know an offer sheet's coming, but it's not going to come for a couple of months. Do you really want to freeze your budget for 2 months? Do you want to freeze your – can you afford to freeze your team for 2 months? Or take our offer.
So he does these things. He retains half of Milan Lucic's salary for next season. I mean, I know you got to give a little bit to get a little bit, and Jones and Miller are both good, but like, God, Jesus, half the salary, and then you have the three picks, and two of them had people leaving their heads, scratching their heads over them, and they couldn't package the picks to move up.
Yeah,
three consecutive first round picks should get you into the lottery. It should.
But I don't know what three though. Oof. But you know what? Yeah, do you not just try to make that deal with Arizona? But Hannafin's still there at five.
Yep.
Yeah, try to make that deal with Carolina.
It's
one thing to say we couldn't do the deal for three with Arizona, or we couldn't do the deal at four with Toronto, but for five?
Yeah, five should have been a deal they could make, because obviously Carolina's in a different place. But the bottom line is that let's just put three out of the equation, because they wanted Strom. They wanted a center to play with Duclair and with Domi coming up. They wanted a center. And they got him.
I would say Dvorak over Duclair at this point, but okay.
Okay, fine. To play with the two wings they're going to have on the top line.
Okay,
all right,
okay,
smarty pants.
Being a prick, sorry.
Jesus Christ!
All right, I'm
talking to the president of the OHL.
Dude, I'm coming. I'm coming off. I mean, it's my favorite time of the year. It's the NHL draft. I still got a little buzz on.
All right. So it's sad. It's sad times for the Boston Bruins, and deservedly so. I don't know. No one knows. No one knows what the direction of this team is for several reasons, but primarily it's this: if you're in a rebuild, isn't Dougie Hamilton, the guy you rebuild around? Isn't that one of the guys?
Yeah, that is. I know. That's why I keep coming back. Like, how often can you go to the well of getting rid of your young superstar?
Yeah, it really is.
Like, how many teams can withstand that?
Let me throw this out here.
Like, it catches up. The Bruins aren't getting any younger here.
They're not. But let me tell you. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
This is just my little inkling. My little back of the brain inkling.
This is just you and me talking.
This
is just you and me
talking. Not based. Just me and you. Not based on anything concrete. Nothing I heard except for the fact that there was a few people saying that this player might be available.
All right. Here we go. Rumor time.
Would you, were you, Doug Wilson, trade Logan Couture for Tuukka Rask? Yeah! What? I'm waiting. Where is it?
If I would have drafted someone like Matthew Barzal instead of Timo Meier, I might have looked
So Timo Meier's your guy who went too high.
No, not at all. I just think I'm just surprised that San Jose didn't go to Matthew Barzal down the street in Seattle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And go for a young centerman.
So you're saying because of what they drafted, you wouldn't, but I think I might.
You would.
The way, and the reason I put this out there is because in hearing Doug Wilson talk about his goaltending situation, he talked about the need for two goalies, but he talked about it very much in the terms of Alex Stalak being the guy who would give another guy a bit of rest, mm-hmm. not a 1-1A. He kind of seemed like he was talking about acquiring an A and then having a B. And when I think about that, I say to myself, what could the Sharks do that they haven't done before to try to shift the paradigm?
So why not go back to the city where Doug Wilson played junior hockey and trade their first, which was 9, to the Ottawa Senators for Robin Lehner?
Because I don't think Robin Lehner is what they haven't had before. They've had guys, you know, they haven't had a guy like Nabokov since Nabokov left.
Right.
Right? They haven't had an A. And Leonard's not an A, mm-hmm. right now at least. No. You get yourself Tuukka Rask. You say to yourself, we are in an effing arms race in this division, and everybody else has improved. We've got a Hagelin on the top line of the Ducks. We've got a Lucic on the Kings. We've got Edmonton with this McDavid fellow. We've got the Flames with Dougie Hamilton. What have we done? We've done nothing. But if we get Tuukka Rask, man, have we done something. I like that.
That's interesting. It's interesting. Although that's a long con. How old is Tuukka Rask going to be when that contract's up? That contract's done.
33, I think.
I don't know.
There you go. So I think the Sharks are going to make a move for a big name starting 60 games to 65 games goalie, is what I predict, based on what Doug Wilson said. But then watch them re-sign Niemi. Because it's also something he said. He literally said, they're like, you traded Niemi to Dallas. He's like, yeah, we traded Niemi to Dallas for a few days. And we're like, wait, what do you mean a few days? He's like, well, they have a few days to talk to him.
He becomes
a restricted free agent.
He's actually signed, Doug. Yeah, they have like $11 million wrapped up in goaltenders in Dallas now. 4.5 AAV, Antti Niemi.
They signed him?
Yeah, yep, it's done.
That's crazy.
4.5 AAV.
Well, good, he won't be coming back then.
No, I ain't coming back. Sorry, Doc.
That's like
those people that tweeted me saying, now that he's a Calgary Flame, the Boston Bruins should offer sheet Dougie Hamilton.
I like that. Listen, I like that for Dallas. I think the shores up the position. Because when Kari Lehtinen's healthy, he's good. He's very good. But he just can't stay healthy.
Well, yeah, what was that first part of that?
Oh, right?
It's been the story from day one, like when he was drafted by Atlanta. Like, just wasn't in shape.
You know, but before the concussions, Lindros was amazing.
Yeah, but concussions are something that in a lot of ways you can't control. That's a combination of, you know, luck and, you know, how many layers of the onion have been peeled. But, like, showing up in shape, especially if you're a goaltender. Like, goaltending is tough on the core, right? Probably a good idea to have a strong one. Just saying, just putting it out there.
How many years for Niemi, by the way?
I think it was three. The three-year deal for Antti Niemi?
It's not. You could do a lot worse.
Hang on.
And thus ends the respectable and usable people.
Here's the thing about Antti Niemi as well. The old Zamboni driver from Helsinki If Dallas is really in a cash crunch, when he's backing up, they can just save money by having him drive the Zamboni.
Oh, I see it here. 5 minutes ago this happened. Well, there you go. Niemi, Dallas.
Yeah.
He could do a lot worse. 3-year contract. A
lot of money on goaltenders in Dallas all of a sudden.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. Let me read what Jim Nill said. We acquired Antti's rights with the expectation to get him signed, and we are thrilled to have come to an agreement this quickly. Mm-hmm. This gives us two upper echelon goaltenders, and the quality of depth at the bat position will provide us with a great chance to win on a nightly basis. That's true.
Won the trade to San Jose.
Goaltender never a problem, though. All right, we got CJ coming up.
He's on right now.
Oh, yeah, CJ, come on. We got to get to this, buddy. Yeah. How are you, Chris Johnson from Sportsnet?
Do we have CJ?
Chris?
Where is he? Hang on.
Here.
There we go. We got him.
Hey, bud.
How's it going, CJ?
I could not be much better. This is a great time of year.
You were so happy to be on your way home on Saturday night at the airport?
Yes. It was a long time on the road.
Hang on, CJ. Let me just speed bump on that for a second. You've been pounding the road lately. I don't know how you're not exhausted.
Well, I am, but I mean, it's the end is in sight here for all of us. The summer's coming, so.
Yeah.
And I do love this time of year when we see trades and signings and all this sort of stuff. I mean, this gets the juices going a little bit.
Yeah. How do you, as you were on hold, Niemi signed 3 years, 4.5 per, I think is what Merrick said. What do you think about Niemi and Lehtonen as your two-headed monster goalie tandem in Dallas?
Well, I think, there's a couple ways to look at this, but Jim Nill didn't really have much choice. I mean, the unspoken part of this deal is that they feel really that Lehtonen's play was so poor last year when he had the worst numbers, at least in terms of save percentage in his career, that it essentially cost them a chance at a playoff spot. So, they've now got more money tied up in goaltending than any other team, $10.4 million in cap space next season, but they can afford to do it, at least in the short term, because so many of their core pieces up front are locked in at pretty good cap numbers. And, this is a chance to make sure that those guys, that they're getting maximum value for those guys, too, in the primes of their career and giving themselves the best chance to get back to the postseason.
Better to allocate that money to the blue line or to the goaltending position, CJ?
In this case, because I don't see them getting rid of Lehtonen, or I didn't see them getting rid of Lehtonen, I really do think this was a move they had to make. I don't think that both of these guys will see through these three-year deals with the Stars in this position. I don't think they can afford to do it forever, but for next season, I don't see it being an issue. They have still some breathing room under the cap and the opportunity to add maybe a little bit on the back end, which is really the only spot I think that they contemplate it right now. Because, again, the specific circumstances here make some sense. But I would be shocked if 3 years from now these guys both finish out their careers at that number, unless the cap rises significantly.
Looking back at draft weekend, who impressed you the most? And which team did you expect to see more from but didn't see it?
I have to go with Calgary, I think. They weren't the only ones to get better, but the Dougie Hamilton trade was, the biggest surprise of the weekend, I would say. I thought that, in Calgary's position where there was a number of teams interested in that player, that was a real home run for them to go out and get him. I think it, makes their already pretty good blue line quite exceptional and quite young. I really liked that move. And, from what I heard, they didn't have such a bad time of, picking either. I don't profess to be an expert on the kids like Merrick is, certainly much more. But, I talked to some scouts that liked what they did. And, maybe the more obvious one for a little bit more is the Leafs, because we know how badly they want to make deals. The new management group to start putting a different stamp on that team. But with a little bit of reflection, I can understand that they don't feel that they have to be in a rush to do something, and they want to maximize the value of their assets, and they weren't able to make those trades, specifically one for Phil Kessel.
Yeah, hey, pause on Phil Kessel for a second. And the Pittsburgh Penguins, as we saw on Saturday, as everything got torn down, the stage being torn down, tables cleared off, the Penguins' table hung around for about an hour. And some of the conversations looked pretty heated, and one would have to expect that at least part of the conversation was about a prospective Phil Kessel deal that was discussed over the weekend. I heard Rob Rossi talking on TSN radio on the weekend about the proposed trade involving Skudarian Kunitz, though that's contract back, either Kasperi Kapanen or Derek Pouliot, plus a first-round pick, which Pittsburgh didn't have And that's what threw a wrench into all of it. That
correct.
That a part of the conversation on Saturday night?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Leafs and Penguins talked about this deal both Friday and Saturday. And, you know, I think that it was a bit of a standoff. I mean, the Leafs wanted more back. I agree with Rob. I'd heard the saying that Pouliot, the former first-rounder, was kind of the enticement for the Leafs, and that Kunitz and Scuderi were the contracts that they would take back. I mean, and those would obviously be players that would play for the Leafs, but would largely be included in that trade to help offset some of the money in the short term for Pittsburgh, which is pretty capped out. But the Leafs, you know, didn't, as far as I can tell, weren't able to create any sort of bidding war with another team, and weren't entirely certain that that was a good enough package if they were maximizing what they could get for Phil Kessel. And I think that they believe that they can wait. I mean, even in the short term here, Phil gets a $4 million bonus on Wednesday, on July 1st, as part of next year's salary. And you'd have to think, even when you pay that out, in some ways he becomes more valuable asset to other teams. Just, you know, it's a less of a financial commitment. I think it's one the Leafs obviously don't mind making to try to increase his value. And I think ultimately they believe Pittsburgh will be knocking back at their door. I mean, the Penguins looked at other wingers as well, but it's no secret that they have to try to address that position in their top six heading into next season, as, you know, the window gets ever and ever tighter, you know, with Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby on their roster as sort of prime-time players.
Yeah, and Andy Strickland reported this morning that he heard that the Leafs offered to retain salary in talks with one team. But you seem to maybe think that the Leafs
I don't think in the Pittsburgh case it would retain salary. They're taking salary on.
Right. But
for another team.
Strickland said that was on the table for another team. CJ, do you buy that or no?
I buy that it could have been part of a discussion, because if you think about it from a big picture, I mean, maybe the Leafs wanted to float that out there to see how it changed the return and whether, you know, while weighing their options, it made it better. I would still be stunned ultimately if Phil Kessel is dealt, if the Leafs do retain that salary, just because I think a 7-year commitment to do so, and there's no option under the CBA to sort of scale it and say, we'll play half in year one and a third in year two, anything like that. I just think that that's too risky right now. I mean, 7 years is an absolute eternity in pro sports. That would certainly be something years down the road where we'd be looking at and going, what? They're still paying $2 million for Kessel and they don't have room for this guy and this guy. I mean, I think the Leafs are more than happy to take back some oversized contracts, you know, whether it's a Scuderi or a Kunitz in the short term and pay those players for 2 or 3 years or whatever term they have left. But 7 years of committing dead money to your cap is difficult to do. I think, you know, that's part of the decisions that, you know, have been made here this week with Mike Richards' buyout and Cody Hodgson. At least the Pierre Parenteau is a little shorter one that Montreal is entertaining. But when you're committing that long to having those guys in your cap, I mean, it's bad news. I mean, the Leafs just got rid of Darcy Tucker's buyout, which seems like a million years ago.
It's true.
I don't think that they're all that willing to add a long-term guy on there again in that same position.
I know, and people have been giggling about that one now for quite a while. They're still paying Tucker. Hey, you know, out of those buyout guys you just mentioned, any one of those gentlemen surprise you?
They really didn't, which I know is a bit of a lame answer, but, you know, really what I think the way to conceptualize this and look at it is that what in the salary cap, everyone needs good value. And the same reason why the Buffalo Sabres 2 years ago signed Cody Hodgson to that deal, they were betting that he was going to become a better player than a 4-point whatever his cap hit was over the course of that deal. You know, as it went along, that didn't happen. And then now they're trying to extract some value because he's under 26 and they can buy him out at a cheaper number. That's why he's getting bought out. I mean, really all these teams are constantly betting against the cap. They're betting on human beings, in this case, and their players. You know, I think all of them so far have been, you know, you didn't look at it and go, wow, I can't believe that happened. I mean, Victor Stahlberg wasn't living up to the contract he signed in Nashville. You know, Parenteau had a tough season in Montreal, but in Montreal it's as much about the fact that they're right up against the cap. They still have a Galchenyuk contract to do, a couple others. You know, the sort of the specific circumstances in all the cases make sense. You know, what I'm really interested to see is we have one more day tomorrow where players can be put on unconditional waivers, you know, to be bought out. And, you know, I've heard a few rumblings out there, whether maybe Alex Semin in Carolina gets one. You know, Stephen Weiss, I believe, is a candidate in Detroit.
Wow.
I mean, some of those, you know, I'm not saying they're going to happen, but I believe they're being contemplated. And some of those might rank as a bit more of a surprise. And in a way, it wouldn't be surprising if they happen on the last day, because it's kind of the last opportunity, other than sort of a loophole that we won't get into with too much CBA leaves. But, you know, it's one of the last chances to do that for teams, and obviously they want to free up the space as they head into free agency on Wednesday.
Yeah, Alex Semin. Always nice to be able to blame the other guy for a mistake, right? If they have to buy him out, geez, what a mess that'd be. Oh, and also, next time anybody...
Tim Murray, Darcy Regier with Hodgson, too. So.
Yeah, right, exactly. There's a lot of that going around, Hey, CJ, one last thing for me, just transitioning over to today's big news, which is what we expect out of the Hall of Fame. What do you expect out of the Hall of Fame today? Who's class of 2015?
Well, I mean, we know a couple. I mean, if Lidstrom and Fedorov aren't there, I think we're going to have to ask for a revote. Beyond that, it's tough to say. You know, I've always been one... You know, there's always a few guys that kind of clink on from year to year. I've thought that Eric Lindros should be there. I'd be happy to see him get in with this class, and
yep.
I'm not sure if it's going to happen. I mean, in the builder category, it's a tough one to forecast because there's not necessarily a rhyme or reason for when it comes. But, you know, you'd have to think that Pat Quinn, given his strong ties to the Hall, his career and obviously his death in the last year, is a candidate there. But, you know, there'll be some intrigue and debate as always. And I guess really the most unfortunate part, I understand it on some level, is that we never get full insight into why the decisions are made. And, you know, I would hope over the years here at some point that there's a little bit more transparency to the process, because I think a lot of us are left guessing, you know, with things we don't know as a result of not knowing, you know, what exactly is happening behind closed doors.
And I guess as a follow-up in two ways. One, do you think that they may hold against Pronger the fact that he has an active contract? And two, what did you think of the Pronger trade?
Well, I don't think they'll hold it against him because they changed their own rules this year, essentially with Pronger in mind, to allow cases like this. So I would be surprised if they then, I mean, I guess it's not the voters that change those rules, it's the board at the Hockey Hall of Fame, but I would be shocked if they held that against him. And, you know, it's going to be kind of cool to see him go in as a Coyote after, you know, two proud days in that organization. You know, I'm one of the ones, though, I'm totally for this. And I realize there was a lot of outcry. But, you know, if you're going to have a firm salary cap system with very specific rules, you know, it's up to the teams to find the ways to best exploit those rules to help themselves out. And I get that the people don't like the look of it, but, I think it's smart. I mean, Philadelphia has really had cap issues the entire time the cap's been in existence, and now finally has an idea of some breathing room. And, you know, in Arizona's case, I just think it's going to keep them from overspending on a few guys simply to reach the floor. You know, I understand the arguments against it, but in the cap, you know, that's a tradable asset. You know, just as I still think Nathan Horton's contract at the Leafs own could be a tradable asset in the future. You know, Mark Savard, we might see his rights move at some point. I mean, this is the system, and, you know, you and I didn't, you know, devise it. But, you know, I think that once you have those rules in place, it's up to each team competitively to try to find ways to exploit it. And that's why I didn't mind it. In fact, I thought it was kind of cool.
CJ, I'm with you 100%. The only issue I have with it is over the Ilya Kovalchuk deal, we kept hearing things about the spirit of the CBA as opposed to the letter of the CBA. That's the one thing that bugs me out of all of it. Like, sort of arbitrarily, they said, okay, Kovalchuk, well, wait a minute. Now that's too much.
You're right. And then, but of course, they revoked the penalty, at least the first round pick. That they originally docked New Jersey, which I think it was a sort of under the table way of noting maybe that they made the wrong decision there. I mean, part of that was the Kovalchuk contract came right at the end of the previous CBA. The writing was on the wall that the league was going to get rid of those so-called backdiving deals and didn't like the way that the Kovalchuk one was structured. I think it was the wrong deal at the wrong time, and the NHL got fed up and decided to challenge one. But, you know, in the end of the day, the Kovalchuk deal did get done in fairly similar terms to the one that was originally proposed, and the first round pick they were docked ended up not, you know, getting docked. So
that's right.
You're right. It was a lot of complaint at the time, a lot of hassle at the time, but I think the NHL did sort of acknowledge they didn't have the grounds to do that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it also reminded me a little bit of that Hossa deal, but I mean, Rocky Wirtz and Bettman. What do you?
Oh,
do?
Wow. That was actually, right, more, so, actually more Bill and Ziegler going. If you want to go all the way back.
Let's really get in some trouble here. What else do you want to talk
about?
Exactly.
Okay, guys, we got 20 minutes. Let's talk about tampering. CJ, we'll start with you. Chris, I'll end with a hardball question. How many marathons do you have planned to run this summer?
Oh, man, I'd be happy to do a 5K at this point. It's been a long grind. I'm going to get back on the track here, Jeff. Don't
attaboy.
Worry.
Attaboy. One of the best runners in the entire industry, Chris Johnson, right there. Thanks, CJ. Great work this season, bud. We'll talk to you later.
Good talking to you guys. Take care.
There he is, Chris Johnson.
Thanks, buddy.
From Sportsnet. Hell of a runner, too. Real good runner. Yeah.
His picture, his avatar, I think, is still him in a little running outfit with his little number on it.
It's funny. Whenever we talk about marathons, like, oh, yeah, you know, I did Chicago. I did Washington. Thinking about Los Angeles. I'm just like, jeez.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, you went running in Fort Lauderdale, which is very laudable, but considering that
my lungs
it was
melted.
Like running in a small pond.
It was awesome, though. Like, honestly, there's nothing like running beside the ocean.
Right.
But by the end, I think one lung may have melted inside of me. This may have happened.
All right, Hockey Hall of Fame. Here's every year you learn a little bit more about what people think about candidates for the Hockey Hall of Fame. And here is what I've discovered this year. Mm-hmm. One, building support for Paul Kariya to be a candidate.
Mm.
One per game player. Mm-hmm. Career dramatically cut short. All that jazz.
Hang on. In the same way that Pavel Bure chummed the waters in a lot of ways for Eric Lindros because of the stats?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he chummed the waters for Paul Kariya, too. And now goes Brown's going to have a piece on Grantland, I think, that's going to kind of back that up. I have Kariya right now at a 12-1 odds. Put him in the same category as Curtis Joseph and McGillney and players like that that have strong cases statistically but may just miss out on that certain je ne sais quoi.
If you go just by skill, McGillney's in going away.
Right, that's like, the issue.
Of all those guys, it's funny. If you talk to players that played both against and with all those guys, okay, so Fedorov, one of the best two-way players of all time, which I was focusing on the Russians initially. Bure, Fedorov, and McGillney, those guys that came over, almost everybody to a person. Who's the best player you ever saw of those three? Alexander McGillney.
Yeah.
Just.
Before we get into the specifics, my ballot right now, I think, would be Fedorov, Lidstrom, Pronger, Lindros this year. I think it's a safe year to get Lindros in. I think the Lindros, the Hockey Hall of Fame does not like courting controversy. If they want to put Lindros in, put him in the same year you put in Pronger.
They kept Pat Burns out for how many years?
Yeah, they don't think that's controversy.
They kept getting knocked in the dirt over it.
Dude, it's not the same thing as snubbing a player. It's not the same thing as snubbing a player. They would not put a player in that people don't think belongs there. It's a different kind of thing. It's a builder category. Builder is more subjective than anything else. And Lindros got in with these stats, but this guy didn't get in with these stats. I mean, it's a very different thing as far as controversy.
Think there's a lot of old school guys there, specifically guys, and they know who they are, that still don't like that uppity kid that didn't go to Quebec.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Just like, you know, which is different than Pat Burns, which is two, maybe three people on that panel that were still fighting wars from 20 years ago.
I like Fedorov.
Okay.
I like that Lidstrom guy. It's all right.
Five, yeah, he's good.
Pronger gets in by the letter of the law. Although, I mean, listen,
oh, the Coyote,
bothered me a little bit.
Yeah.
It bothers me a little bit that an active player will be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, they didn't make that exception for Gretzky. I mean, I guess we should do it for Pronger, though.
Gretzky was never on LTI.
And then I would go Lindros. Builder Pat Quinn and women's player would be Ruggiero for me.
What? Over Cassie Campbell. Pascal, how dare you? There's your American bias showing right there.
Oh, it's complete American bias. Here's the thing with the Hall of Fame. Okay, let's say that Lidstrom, Fedorov, Pronger are all locks.
Yeah.
Lindros versus Recchi, who do you put in?
Lindros.
Okay. Lindros, Andrychuk.
Lindros.
Lindros, Housley.
Lindros.
Okay. So Lindros is your guy.
Even though, you know, there's a Stanley Cup issue, even though that's a team trophy, I just don't know many centermen who revolutionized the position the way that he did. Like, once upon a time, you weren't supposed to be that big and move your feet like that and do those things with skill and with strength the way that Lindros did. We hadn't seen – I mean, the first sort of Eric Lindros that we had seen was Jean Beliveau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that was it.
It's the Hall of Fame. No one was more dominant. He's the biggest name in hockey.
During
his best years.
There's a couple of things. I mean, a lot of people put a premium on duration of career, and rightfully so. And Gordy and Chelios, like, fantastic, right? But then also look at your time as a quote-unquote peak performer or peak player. And for that span of however many years, Eric Lindros was the dominant player in the NHL, period.
My own arbitrary thing with the Hall of Fame is that I think you need to be have been a top five player at your position at some point during your career. That's my thing. Everybody's got their own thing. Mm-hmm. You know, no Russians, whatever. Like, my own thing is, you know, top five player at your position. I think it's a reasonable assessment.
Right.
Which brings me to my debate this morning with the state of Texas, in which everybody and their mom just believes wholeheartedly that Sergei Zubov is a no-brain Hall of Famer.
I don't know about no brain. He's a bubble guy, but damn, he was a good defenseman. He's going to be one of those guys that's in the conversation for a long time, and eventually he's going to get in there. But he's not a no. Nick Lidstrom is a no brainer.
Zubov. Do you think that he gets in though? Here's the thing.
Would
you
someone, put him in? Someone, his, someone,
hold on, hold on.
For him.
Would you put him in over Housley?
If you take Hull out of the equation, not Housley.
Yeah, Housley's the second highest scoring American player as a defenseman.
I would have thought for sure that considering how, you know, it was Leach and Zubov, puck on a string in 1994, there would be more love for Sergei Zubov out there.
Right, right.
Even though Leach seemed to get all the headlines, Zubov was a hell of a defenseman in that round.
But then again, there wasn't a hell of a lot of love for Gary Suter either.
Dirty player. You see who did the career in Gretzky?
Here's the thing. At the end of when this guy's career is over and he is eligible, do you put in
Dougie
Sergei
Hamilton.
Zubov?
Oh.
Hold on. Do you put close? Not close at all. I don't know why I said that. Do you put in Sergei Zubov over Sergei Gonchar?
Oh boy, that's a
because
I probably would put Zubov in over Gonchar.
Okay, that's fine. I probably would. That's fine. I don't get the no-brainer status of a guy who may not be the best Russian defenseman of all time. I'm still looking for someone to say that he was a top five defenseman at any point in his career.
I have a request to make for everybody who has a Twitter account. When you want to refute that someone is a no-brainer, please refer to them as a brainer. No, Zubov's a brainer.
That's really funny.
Thank you.
You know, Pronger was a brainer, actually, coming into the with his elbows and such.
Oh, my god.
Bit of a brainer.
Oh, my god. Yeah. So was Gordy.
Yeah, it was Gordy, right. So, Zubov is amazing. He's a top five, he's a top 10 defenseman, okay?
Such a good player.
I know that it's not his fault that he played during an era in which there were amazing, awesome, great defensemen, but are you honestly going to put him in Niedermeyer's class?
Nope.
Pronger's class?
Nope.
Lidstrom's class?
Nope.
Chelios?
Nope.
Stevens?
Nope. Nope.
Bork?
Nope.
I'll put him ahead of Rob Blake if you want. That's fine. I'll do that for you.
Ooh, I don't know, man. No one ass hit like Rob Blake did.
Oh, it's funny. Someone made the argument the other thing about the Zubov debate this morning that's been maddening is that everybody's been making all of these caveats as to why he didn't get more respect. Well, he was Russian. He didn't talk to anybody. He played in Dallas. Yeah, you know who also played in Dallas?
Mike Modano.
Mike Modano. Yuri Lehtinen. Lehtinen won three Selke trophies as a winger. But Dallas never gets any respect. And then the other thing was that he didn't play physical enough, but only players that played physical got love during that era, which is so baffling when you consider two of the guys that got more love than anybody were Nick Lidstrom and Scott Niedermeyer.
Yeah, and last time I checked, you know, it wasn't as if, you know, Brian Leach was, you know, was destroying guys coming over the blue line.
Brian Leach is Massachusetts in for Nick Cronwall. I don't know if you knew that.
I had no idea. Oh,
destroyer
good.
Of men. Yeah, oh, exactly.
Very good. Oh, very nice. I had no clue.
Look, I think there is no shame in being top 10, being top 7, what have you. But I defy you, outside of maybe the year where he was a Norris finalist.
Can I make my
year in which he was a top 5 defenseman in the NHL?
Can I make my annual plea for, and just to keep it top of mind for everybody, for a player like Adam Foote? For whatever reason, every single year, we completely disqualify the defensive defenseman in the Hall of Fame voting. The defenseman who doesn't put up points but has the nerve to play in his own zone and do that job, i.e. Neutralize offense and get the puck out. It is a skill that is undervalued, whether it's All-Star games or Hall of Fame voting. I know it's not sexy to say Adam Foote belongs in the Hall of Fame, but Adam Foote and players like him deserve it. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Wish?
I think that's a good point. I also think it's a good point to say that Dave Andrychuk scored 640 goals, which is a lot of goals, and should not be held accountable for the goals, the means by which he scored those goals. And we end the show with this.
Pat Verbeek?
Just released by the Los Angeles Kings, this statement. The Los Angeles Kings have terminated the contract to forward Mike Richards.
Mm-hmm.
The comment from the Kings: today we have exercised the team's right to terminate the contract of Mike Richards for a material breach of the requirements of his standard player's contract. We are not prepared to provide any more detail or discuss the underlying grounds for this contract termination at this time.
Yeah.
Suffice it to say, Jeff Merrick, and we're speaking from an informed speculation point of view here, there is an off-ice reason why Mike Richards is no longer a member of the Los Angeles Kings.
All I heard were whispers and rumors all weekend long. And last time I checked, I don't have enough money to lawyer up, so I'm just going to shut up. But it'll come out, I would assume.
Okay, that's all we can say. Wish we could say more, but Don Meehan, there's a better chance you could successfully sue the National Hockey League than try to beat Don Meehan.
Yeah, there's something. We'll see. It doesn't come as a surprise.
Don't even go fishing. I'm just saying you may want to hold off on your Mike Richards would look good in this uniform stories.
Yeah,
because the chance that he might not be in uniform.
Maybe. Who knows? But no.
Wish him the best. We hate playing grab ass with you, but like seriously, it's one of these situations where there's, you know, heat coming down from Camp Richards on people trying to discuss this openly, but it'll come out. So gird your loins. All right, everybody.
On that happy note, wow. I feel bad. It's one of those situations you feel bad for everybody involved too. Ugh.
It really does, and I'm sure there's probably a good book in there somewhere about the roller coaster ride of Mike Richards' career. But bottom line is this: no matter what the reasoning, it just goes to show you that sometimes loyalty has its drawbacks. Mm-hmm. And when you got a chance to buy out a guy when you should buy him out, but you're like, but he was part of the team.
It's tough. You just win the Stanley Cup.
No, buy him out. Come on, it's a business.
I get it. I know. You're right. Ultimately, you're right, because we get so wrapped up in the entertainment of it that we forget that at the end of this, we're reminded every lockout how much of a business it is. But you're right. You are right. In a salary cap era, loyalty cannot exist. It can't. You can't afford it. You can't afford to be loyal.
Gird your loins, everybody. It's gonna be a bumpy ride.
Okay, we're going to move on. You and me got to talk off air and figure out a summer schedule for the podcast. Sam and I were just talking about
that.
We totally will.
I will end by saying that everybody should go back and give Katie Strang's story about the LA Kings a chance, another read again. Boy, it's a good, insightful story.
Hey, it was great to see Stranger at our party, eh?
Yeah, it was really great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You want to say anything about the party?
Because I had a great freaking time.
Oh, wait, you did. That's
we did.
That's right.
We
went after the party, right?
It was an awesome time. Yeah, that was, like, I'm always blown away, like, at how many people listen to this goofy thing and then would even want to come out and, you know, have a drink with us at one of these dumb events. But God bless each and every one of you. And I hope we got to spend enough time with everyone just, you know, shooting the shit and talking about hockey, because you folks are the best, hands freaking down. I've said it before, I never had as much fun doing anything in media as I have with this podcast. Even though, you know, it's something that Greg and I just do because we like doing it. And maybe that's why people dig the vibe of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a job, so we don't treat it as such. And that's why we're kind of sloppy and, you know, sometimes we're on and sometimes we're not and sometimes we're on time and most times we're not. But we just appreciate, you know, the effort of all you guys coming out. So thanks. And we'll do it all again next year. What about you, Wish?
Yeah, absolutely. It was the best time and you guys are the best. And I don't know. What's there left to say other than what Merrick just said? And thanks for, you know, my goal every year is to go to our draft party and never have to buy a drink for myself. And I successfully did that once again. Thanks, everybody.
Oh, your streak of keeping your communion money in your pocket is intact, sir.
I do what I can, really. I mean, it's the way I figure it is that we could either do a Kickstarter to help fund the show, or people can just buy me beer at the
Greg
draft party.
Greg Wyshynski Booze Starter. Greg, for those of you that don't know, has what we like to refer to as an onion wallet. Every time he opens it, he starts to cry.
That's right. Also, I don't know. There's really no other thing to make of it. All right, everybody. We'll figure out the week. But bottom line is that also remember on Wednesday for Free Agent Frenzy, your friends at Puck Daddy will have day long coverage. Me and Leahy here in the Yahoo War Room.
Mm.
And there you have it. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Go watch the Hall of Fame stuff.
Go Hall of Fame. Get Lindros in there, please. Cassie Campbell-Pascal. Woo.